Hello and welcome to The Big Fight. You know something? Trust humans to take a name that is associated with something so good and then to have a very negative connotation to it. I'm talking right now about blue whale, of course, one of the most magnificent of animals on this planet, and now associated, unfortunately, with a particularly cruel game that has also been associated by a large number of deaths, including here in India. Now, you could say that blue whale and games like that and other associated forms of cyberbullying are not as common or prevalent as they are elsewhere, but that's not really a consolation. So today we're going to be taking a look at blue whale, we're going to be looking at other forms of cyberbullying, and then we're going to be stretching that a little further. The targeting of young children by some really vicious people, we've seen it with blue whale, we've seen it with games like that, but we're also seeing it elsewhere in England. I'm going to get Sohail to talk about that in a little while. The specific targeting of young girls by gangs of predators, that's something else that's happening. The pushing of children into suicide. It is a crime and it's a particularly vicious crime. What can we do? What can parents do? What, if anything, can the government do? What should we be doing as a society? That's what we're going to be discussing on The Big Fight today. And let me start off by welcoming all of our panelists. It's great to have joining us from Kolkata, Anindita Mishra, who's actually developing software and working on in specifically in this field and can help tell us how we should be guarding and watching against this. Dr. Amit Sen, it's great to have you with us, a child and adolescent psychiatrist. It's a pleasure to have you with us. Jiten Jain, director of Voyager InfoSec, is... again, somebody who's done a lot of work in this field and looking at some of the, as an ethical hacker or whatever it is that they're calling, you can maybe help guide us on what the best way is to look at child safety. Rajni Kanduja, a senior counselor at St. Mary's School and is presumably giving a lot of advice to children, maybe worrying about some of what's happening. Standing next to her, somebody who's a child at heart, if not a child in any other way, so he'll say it, is going to be telling us what he thinks we should be doing as a society. And also, Sohail, you spent a fair amount of time recently in England. I'm going to be talking to you about some of the international experiences, Rothersham, some of the other cases that are coming out there. Predator, gangs, it's a global phenomena. What can we be really doing about it? And my colleague, Manika Raikwad, we all know her as an anchor and a managing editor here at NDTV, but is here in her capacity as a parent because she has such strong views on the subject and has been eating my brains for years, Manika, on what we should be doing as parents. So you're going to be coming in and telling us all about that. So Anuja Chauhan, our final guest, joining us from Bangalore. Anuja, thanks so much, writer, parent. This obviously is something which will be causing a certain amount of concern. Let me start off with looking at blue whale and specific things which have been really making the headlines this week and in previous weeks, and then I'm going to come to broader issues. How prevalent is it? How much should we worry?
If you're talking about blue whale, the game specifically, then it's probably a small minority of lots of the other bullying that goes on. Whatever little research I've done, it seems to me that India is probably one of the places which is where it's more prevalent, along with Russia, no doubt, and Brazil, and China, perhaps. The way I look at it is not just about this one game, but you know, the numerous kinds of games and other social spaces that get kids into a corner where they have no option but to take a drastic step.
Right. Anindita, I mean, it's of course almost bizarre to be calling this calling blue whale a game. It's certainly not a game. It's just a vicious form of some really evil people preying on children who seem to be going through a low point of their life. There's nothing cool about blue whale. How can people watch against this one in particular?
The parents have to be playing a more proactive role to parent these digital age kids. That is of vital importance out here, and that should be our top priority, because if I quote some stats out here to prove my point, 49% of parents are aware of the stranger danger problem. Now, the blue whale, as you rightly pointed out, is not an app that you can download and play. It rather works on the psychology of the child. So if a child is depressed, if a child is under peer pressure, then the parent has to know that first, because no amount of security on a device would be able to stop a child from taking part in the game if that game has happened to be trending, like we have seen the selfie image, the ice bucket challenge, other interesting challenges that had come out and that children had taken part in large numbers. So only where there is awareness can there be some action from the part of the parents.
Okay, create the awareness first. Now, I think it's just relevant to look a little bit at this and what exactly has been going on. Here are some of the deaths so far, suspected deaths linked to blue whale. There have been in July, Kerala, 16-year-old boy, again in Kerala, family claims a 22-year-old committed suicide. Mumbai, 14-year-old in August, right, this month now. West Bengal, 15-year-old committed suicide. Solapur, 14-year-old, rescued those, saved just in time. And then in Indore, again a 13-year-old rescued, I mean, saved just in time. But here's the interesting point, and I think it's worth just going over this to a certain extent, what the government is doing, what the specific laws are. It's not quite that simple, as I was saying, to shut it down. Why? Because the sources are known. It could be secret chat rooms, it could be hackers reaching out. The groups that are targeting children may not even have the term blue whale associated with them. Essentially here, it's an administrator that is adding you as a potential target. And it's not, as I started off by saying, it's not an app, it's not a website, it's not a game that you can actually ban or delete or all that. It's covert, it's underground. So as a result of that, when you're seeing what the High Court is saying, what the government is saying, this is what the High Court said. The High Court says, we are expressing concern, we are wondering why both children and adults are doing this. No order has been passed against internet companies to take down links. Actually, what are the links? There's a plea was direct internet companies to take down the links of this game and to set up a special Delhi police team. We had the government then stepping in, and you had Ravi Shankar Prasad saying, we've issued instructions to tech platforms regarding the game. No initiative will be permitted that provokes youngsters to commit suicide. Now, all of this is fine. How do you do it?
There is very little government can do. I mean, the censorship or blocking of URLs will simply not work because there is no single source of origination of this game. Earlier, there were a couple of apps which are based on this game, but they have already been taken off. Now, what we are seeing is secret chat rooms, gaming websites where people talk to each other, play games, and in those secret conversations, they are playing blue whale game also. And most of the sites are HTTPS sites. They are encrypted communication sites. So government cannot even surveil upon those sites on the actual content of conversations.
Though you can do something like, for example, on Twitter, you're seeing curator, admin, those hashtags like that.
What companies can do, definitely social media's companies can remove articles which are writing about why people should play this game, or you know, if somebody is posting about a forum where this game is being played, those sort of content can be removed. The only way you can save your children from this is that you have to talk to your children. Please find time to talk to your children. Talk to them about their problems, and you know, try to find out some signs or you know, some sort of their behavior if there is a change.
It's not just about talking to them about their problems. I mean, that's obviously a part of it. But you know, this whole scenario that a lot of parents sometimes build about saying ignorance is all right, you know, don't talk to them. I mean, I have a
talk to them because then they'll get to know about it.
And for me, I mean, I think that's just crazy. I have a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old. And they know about it. They knew about it before I did, before it became a thing. And, you know, the whole idea is when your child is asking you something, have a conversation, answer their doubts, let them have questions. Because if they know, they also know they can come to you with anything.
Look, it's a reflection. So let me just come to you, Rajendra. Now, her point is the kids probably know, so you should talk to them to tell them why it's bad, why it's dangerous. The flip side of that, you know, in a sense, it's a reflection of a debate we've been having about children and children education in a range of areas, going all the way back to sex education. You have schools and others saying, don't talk to children about sex education because, my God, you're going to be corrupting their mind. But actually, in the schools and others say, well, the children can probably teach you a few things
and
as
by
to
the
what
way,
all they're being exposed
studies
to.
Studies have shown when you actually do talk to them, it lessens, you know, the number of unwanted teenage pregnancies and all of that.
So should you be talking about things like blue whale?
One is spreading awareness. It's not about telling them what's there. It's not telling them that what you should do or should not do. Anyways, for anything, because it's blue whale, as Dr. Amit said, it's a very small thing. Actually, it's a larger issue that how much we are talking, how much we are helping them think that what is right, what is not right for me, and awareness
But specifically in a school, so I'll come to the broader issue, specifically in a school, if a challenge pops up, like blue whale, or something that can lead to cyberbullying like Saraha, which we'll talk about in just a couple of minutes, when these specific things come up, and they are suddenly being spoken about, as a school, as a counselor, as parents, should you take your children, sit them down and say, look, you're going to hear about something called blue whale, it's bad, horrible, wrong for ABC reasons.
Definitely.
I'm giving you this information. Yeah. Should you do that?
We will do that. And apart from, as I'm saying, talking and telling them what is right or wrong, we will think along with them. Okay. Why there is a reason to not be there.
Anuja, let me get you in. Marika is saying always talk to the kids, let them know it. Don't think that by not talking to them, you can keep them away from these terrible things, because they are going to find out anyway.
The trouble is that we are just not having enough conversations with our kids. You can't just like do like the stopgap thing and say, okay, here's a bulletin in public interest issued to my child today over the dining table. And now let's go back to our separate words. You're an adolescent, I'm a working mother. You have to have consistent conversation with your kids all the time on every subject under the sun. Then you'll know what's going on.
Okay, Anandita, coming back to you, yeah. Spreading of awareness, yeah. Does it lead to curiosity and therefore a lot more people trying it out?
Definitely, but the curiosity can be a good thing because it gives parents a talking point. See, mostly whatever is happening online, children learn way before any adults do. So whether it be the Saraha app, whether it be Tinder, Vine, dating apps, whatever it is, I learn from my children what is new in the social media world. In one of our surveys, 54% of the parents have said that they have discovered their child accessing inappropriate sites, which happens to be the highest among the 13 countries surveyed. Yet, even through all these awareness, we find that it's not translating into any remedial actions. Parents are not securing devices. They are not having the talk, you know, with the children on the do's and don'ts in the cyber world.
Okay, so you securing devices, I think that's an interesting point. I want to come back to you with that. At the end of the day, is the counter to technology running amok more technology? So you find a way of securing devices. You have parental controls, you have passwords, you mirror phones, as has happened in some cases. So, but before I go to that, let me just come to you. And I also want to keep coming to some of the international experiences. You know, you've been in London when, for example, the debates have been having as to how these gangs of Pakistani men, which for some reason are euphemistically being called Asian men in Britain, which is something which baffles me, that they're largely Pakistani, but they've been targeting, you know, young girls. And the question has come that how is it that thousands of young girls have been able to be targeted in a manner like that without anybody really finding out? So this sort of a debate is there at a global level.
So there are three things. One, taking off from what Amit said, you know, talking to children is fine. I mean, that's a non sequitur. The problem is there is digital abrogation of parental responsibility. You give the child an iPad, he's busy, he's out of my hair, let him or her do whatever the hell he or she wants. So that's number one. We have abrogated parental responsibility by giving them devices that keep them busy, not realizing that also make them prone and targets of vicious cyberbullying. Number two, the school education today, especially in India, is woefully inadequate as far as digital evolution is concerned. Teachers in schools do not have the capability to actually have a discussion or a debate with children around the entire digital space. And I'm not even referring to cyberbullying. Number three, sociologically, and please correct me if I'm wrong, there's a kind of machismo associated with some of these challenges. And that is a result even of peer pressure. You asked me specifically about England. Let me address that. If you see the radicalization of young girls in England who were being recruited for ISIS, that was all done digitally. It was done digitally because what you did was you created peer groups. So you were the Facebook of cyberbullying, created people with like-minded aspirations or like-minded depression tendencies, and then wove an intricate pattern around them to suggest that, look, you're not alone, you're part of a group. What England has done remarkably well is they've invested a lot of money in cyber tracking. The important thing is to track behavior before you can prevent any accident. The problem with our country is we are always reactive rather than proactive most of the time.
Yeah.
So it's almost like England, operation successful, patient
dead. But in England,
dead.
It went beyond that. It's not just a handful of people being recruited for ISIS. It's a matter of bewilderment that for decades, thousands of young girls were being systematically raped by paedophile gangs. Neither the parents found out, nor the community found out. When the police was given warnings about it, they chose not to act. They turned. You just had the shadow, you know, education secretary stepping down on.
Because there's also societal pressure and societal shaming. people don't want to admit that my child is susceptible to any. Look at our country by and large, and let's not debate this further. If you tell someone that I'm going to a therapist, the general belief is, oh, there must be something radically wrong with your mental state. We don't treat it as curative. We treat it as problematic.
Okay.
So unless we get rid of that and also have the legal framework, the Supreme Court should actually set down a set of laws which say that cybercrime is as dangerous. I mean, this is a betterment to suicide.
And one other thing, I just want to add to what Suhail's saying. You know, he's made a very important point about how internet's booming in India, you know, practically now around the country. It's not just in metros and small towns and cities. Everyone has a smartphone. Kids are just being handed devices. You hear of these birthday parties where, you know, they begin giving smartphones and iPhones and all of that. Now, in that scenario, it's all very well that you're, and it's a lot of it is not just about what you spoke about, Mukismo. It's also about peer pressure that is coming down from the child who says, you know, mom, everybody in my class has a phone, so why don't I have a phone? So that,
and,
so you,
and
so
nobody in my class has, so all parents can probably no one else has got a password protection, so why should I have it?
Nobody
else has parent control, so why should I have it?
So, but Vikram,
XYZ is watching videos in the middle of the night, why can't I be allowed to
do it? Where your parental responsibility has to come
absolutely
in. How much are you going to give in to your children?
So, okay.
You know, or peer pressure for that matter.
Let's address this one at a time. Hang on. Let's address it one at a time. One, what, if anything, can the government do?
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Government can do very little. Look at the society. Cities are offering free Wi-Fis. Every government is out there to offer free Wi-Fis. Companies
stations
are offering almost free cell phones, which parents are happy
to
buy.
You could have a... Let's think this through. You could theoretically... China has been able to firewall a lot of the internet off. Theoretically, you could say all ISPs have to prevent any porn in India, have to prevent any...
You do that and you'll be called anti-porn, and you do that, you'll be called, you are spying on the society, you bring Aadhaar.
I'm not saying you should, I'm not saying that you should do it.
So there is a debate.
Is it technically possible for the government to do it?
But laws don't
change
society.
Because somehow China has a firewall.
Laws don't change society. Human behavior changes on its own evolutionary
track. That is an acceptable norm in Chinese society. In India, technologically, it is not possible to ban a particular, you know, segment of internet like porn or
social media.
You ban torrents in India.
Vikram,
I can tell you right now, I can go log on and there'll be 1,000 torrents.
No, I'm
just saying
television.
That exactly what he's saying. You know, the government can keep blocking.
Banning is not a solution.
With the right English, banning is possible, but you can't enforce the ban.
Anantha, what can the government do?
All the bans, all the checks that are being put in place, we need to keep in mind that our security depends on us. The user is the weakest link in the security chain.
Yeah.
So what we need to do is we need to learn. There are rules. Now, supposing we give the child, just like as you mentioned that you give the child an iPad and you free yourself all your responsibility.
Yeah,
it's like giving a child, a minor, the car keys and say, go for a spin. We don't do that. We educate them. We give them a license. We supervise them during the first few rounds and then we allow them to go out on their own. You do the same thing when children go online and continue to keep an eye on them till they become mature or responsible enough to handle themselves.
Anuja, is there something you would like to see the authorities doing on this, or at the end of the day, is it down for the families to try and figure this out?
These are our children. Our children are in danger. I don't have that much. I cannot allow my children to be in this kind of situation. Wait for the government to do something. It moves at its own pace. So does the legal system. This is my family that's in danger, and I have to be very proactive about it. It is totally a personal fight. This is about families sitting down together, keeping track of what's happening. As Suhail said, not just handing out, you know, laptops and saying, just because, oh, mama, if I don't have alcohol at my party, nobody will come. And you have to be strong at that point to say, okay, baby, no party for you then. I mean, you can't. And the thing is, there is so much parental shaming going on, guys. I mean, we are being shamed constantly. So-and-so's mother doesn't allow her child to have more than 11 o'clock curfew. So-and-so's mother said, no sex till you're 21. I mean, these are all things that they're saying, like, our friends will laugh at you. But at a point, I'm like, I don't care, dude. This is my house. These are my rules.
No,
I have to say it unashamedly, because then they realize that there's no shame in what I'm saying.
Exactly. And we are the parents.
And it is wrong if a child is feeling suicidal and is going online
Absolutely.
Seeking out predators and you don't know.
Anuja's point, let's imagine, God forbid, your child is suffering clinical depression. Shouldn't you be responsible? Shouldn't you know? What kind of a parent are you that you're not in the loop? Parents in this country have had the tendency, by and large, not all parents, some parents have the tendency to abrogate their responsibility to schools and to society at large, but they forget that you're only in school for 8 hours out of 24.
Yeah, but
Vikram, one second. I just want to add to that, which is that, you know, parents nowadays also get through this whole thing of, you know, we're working. Guilt is a huge part of it because, you know, parents are in high stress jobs. They're out of the house 10 to 12 hours a day. How do you just please your child? Give him whatever he wants. Give her whatever she wants. It's easier that way. You don't feel that guilty. But you're the parent. No, one second. I just want to bring in one more point where I think there's going to be a lot of talk about this whole issue of privacy and children.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's I'm all for privacy. But what is the privacy that, you know, you give a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old or in some cases 10-year-olds an iPhone, a smartphone, whatever, somewhere where imagine a 10-year-old who, you know, very often is not, cannot do most things in life. It's just, you know, thinking for themselves.
On the internet, unsupervised, uncontrolled. Okay, that's an interesting one. Let me come to that. Let's talk about the child's.
So the thing is that although technology probably has a big contributory role in some of these things, and no doubt parenting is a big discussion point I find here, and which is extremely important, but there are some other larger facts that stare at our face, and which we can use this forum as a fulcrum to talk about, which is the amount of teenage suicide we have in our country. It's one of the highest in the world. The question arises as to why and how do our children go through depression, and even if they do, how many people in the community or society are able to identify what childhood depression looks like? How many parents know? How many school teachers know?
I was just about, in fact, to shift the entire debate into looking at teenage depression and suicide,
and
but I just
want
to finish the technological point of leaving people unsupervised, right? Yeah. And this is where the rules thing starts to come up, and every parent would probably identify with what Anuja is saying, what Manika is saying, that yes, you have this constant peer pressure issue that, you know, I'm allowed to do whatever I'm doing on my phone, nobody should be able to look at me. What is the solution to that? Is it parental controls? I've seen some people saying, okay, we're going to mirror the kids' phone secretly on our own so we can see whom people are talking to. Is it having access to that? Is it getting software like NetNanny or whatever to put onto the devices?
A lot of parents have been, you know, I run a cybersecurity company, and I see a lot of parents when I go for school workshop, they say that, can you put a monitoring app in my child's phone and give me all the data I have? And sometimes we simply say no, that, you know, it is possible, we will not do it, because there is a fine relationship a parent and a child shares, and that should stay. And what we advise them is that if you want to do it, if you want to monitor your child, if it has come to that extent, tell him that you're monitoring him and then do it.
Yeah.
Don't spy on him.
As they are saying, you've got an 11, 12, 13-year-old kid who's been given an iPad or an iPhone or whatever it is. You can argue whether it should be happen at all. There's some people who say, don't give kids technology right now. Assuming you've done it, should there then be parental controls on
there
that?
There is a method and there is a process you have to follow before going for ultimate supervision. You see, when in a top Delhi school where I went for a workshop, there were around 50 parents, and all of their child were, you know, sixth or seventh classes. And I asked all of them, how many of you, you know, think that your children are on Facebook? They said, no, we don't allow them to be on Facebook. And then 20 of the mothers said that, you know, my child says, my other classmates are on Facebook, why are you not allowing me? So already 50 of them are on Facebook, but there's a disconnect that parents do not know that whether they're on Facebook or not.
Okay.
Here, I think a major role telecom companies can also play. The landscape has changed. It's not about the laptops and computers anymore, where you could, you know, put a lockdown or say that switch off the router, we won't have access to internet, or you'll only do it for 2 hours sitting in the front of my eyes. Now they go to the rooms at the night. They are chatting whole night till 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. Parents are not aware of it. So what these companies can do, they can provide the parental packs where the parents can have a control on the internet access that, okay, fine, after 11 o'clock, internet access is mobile phone will stop.
Can I just say something? And let me, this comes back to
the
schools.
This is better instead of spying.
I'll tell you why the schools have a role in this, because A, schools are where some of these parental pressure things can be done. There could be certain norms or discussions. If all the parents in a school agree on certain basic rules, this is what is the norm, and the school says we are doing it, it takes that entire parental pressure thing away, because now it's a common rule for everybody. Yeah. That's point number one. And point number two, when it comes to internet access, these days there are many schools who are saying,
all the homework is being uploaded online.
Website.
All the stuff, research has to be done online. That becomes a reason and a major reason for the kids to say,
they're giving
we have to have access
to
the internet. I mean, how am I going to do my homework?
But those are intras. You can create an entire intra operating system. So you're not actually
but,
going
but
out of the
But hang on,
network.
That's in the school. If the school is saying, when you go back home today, get onto the internet and download your homework, that means that parents, by definition, have to give them internet access.
So I don't know whether we can work on either or principles. Absolute allow permission to do something or no permission to do something. Definitely one very important thing which is being discussed is boundary. I will give certain things to my child, but there has to be a discussion on boundaries, how much, when, what, and as other panelists are saying,
but why aren't
it
schools
will depend-
having that discussion
we
with
are
parents?
That's,
this is something which all parents should sit together and agree on common
rules.
That is
the second thing which I am coming to, because a very important thing which Mr. Seth said, that it is to be proactive and not reactive. And that's what the school's approach have to be, and that is the whole model of mental health in the school, that you have to work on prevention rather than cure. So okay, all the circle time activities, all the life skill activities which you do with them, your parental work with them, how many times in a year you are meeting with parents and having this kind of a contract, that see, this is what we are discussing,
Vikram,
this is what
Anuja,
you can also
Anuja
do.
Would it,
talking,
Anuja,
talking.
Would it solve the peer pressure issue substantially if the schools would try and evolve certain basic rules and norms of conduct for all parents in a grade? Because then at least it becomes something which all parents can say, no, you know, we've been told by the school that curfew should be, or of course, some parents will say, none of the school's business, they're back home. But is this one way of solving the peer pressure issue?
Eventually, I don't think this is a problem we can solve in the virtual world. It is something that will have to be solved, you know, humans
Anandita,
coming together.
On the technology of it, are parental control software, knowing the passwords of your children's devices, snooping software that can sometimes be introduced. Technologically, what have you found works the best? And what are the sort of things that you recommend to people?
May I start with the non-technological part of it? And that is, parenting digital age children is no rocket science. It is just an extension of your parenting skills that you extend to the technological world. And parents got to explain to the children that, listen, I trust you, but not trust the stranger out there. So therefore, I am going to install the parental control app, and so that I can keep an eye on what is happening in your online world. And I'll do this till I find you're responsible enough to handle it yourself.
Can I jump in here? Because I feel very strongly about this particular discussion about parental control, because there is always a flip side to it. Whereas negotiated control, where you take the children on board and you're having a discussion and deciding where the control should lie, if you go beyond it, and if you're doing it behind their back or you're doing it against their will, then there is every possibility of spoiling a precious relationship with your children. And then all the kind of boundaries that you're talking about, the negotiations or the time you want to spend with them, is not going to work. We have to remember that our kids are much better at it, at technology, than we are. So if we are actually going against the will and doing some of these things like Net Nanny and stuff like that, they will find a way around it. There has to be some operation.
Net Nanny is with their consent, because it has to be. They have to know the
discussion. Your debate centers around urban India and urban education systems. What is going to happen in Class A, Class B towns? Today, your digital penetration is 87%.
Especially in the government schools.
With smartphones penetrating almost 87% of India's population, what are you going to do there? Where is going to be the negotiation? What educational tools are you providing teachers in those Mufassil towns, in those villages, which will guard children? Because from the list that you read out, a lot of those happen in Class A or Class
Absolutely.
B towns.
Yeah.
So those are serious issues which even the government needs
but
to address.
Sahil, and I'm sorry, in sort of all these towns and the smaller areas that you're talking about, it's not just about schools. You know, technology is changing so fast.
Correct.
I mean, we grapple every day to keep up with it.
Yeah,
what
the
about
kids are always going to be one level ahead. That's
ahead. So what about parents? I mean, where is that kind of awareness or that kind of education or whatever, where is that coming
and
from?
And who's providing it?
Who's providing it?
I don't want to turn to the audience. I want to get some of the young people in here, lots of kids out here. So first of all, before I take your questions and comments, I just want to ask the young people, how many of you think that there are dangers on the internet which you should be aware of? How do you think those dangers should be managed for you? Should it be parents spying? Should it be software? Should it just be awareness? What do you feel? Yeah.
I'm more comfortable talking to my school counselors than my parents. So it's better that if my school is telling me what's wrong on the internet and they explain it to me why. So I'm very much comfortable. They are beside me, but
yes, sir, right,
but that's
well,
you
he's
being
be
honest.
Smiling that much. Okay. No, so okay. Let me then throw that question to your parents. Are some of these awkward conversations that it's almost better to have with the school?
I think it's better to have with the parents.
Okay.
Why not both?
You can have this conversation outside later. Why do you feel that you would rather find it easier to talk to it in school? Because it's awkward.
I think I spend the like most proportion of my day in the school with my teachers, so I'm more comfortable with them.
Okay, fine. Let me get some other views.
This is the most public indictment of parenting I've ever seen.
My question is very general. See, whenever parents talk to their child, they go for career orientation. What about the inner development of a child? Yeah. And when something wrong comes, you just ban pornography, or you cannot just ban all the dangers from the world.
If the kid is 13 years old or 12 years old, I think the parents are fully entitled to say we are banning
but
pornography or blue whale.
No.
Okay, I'm going to come to the young kids, all of you in this row. Now tell me, how do you think parents or school should control your internet? How do you think it should be done? You have no idea. Some of you don't want it to be controlled at all. I think that's the reason why they're all completely quiet. Any of you? Yeah. How do you think it should be done?
I think so. There should be a parental control to the internet by the parents, that children shouldn't visit the sites which are like not useful. And
how
not
do they control that?
They should.
How would you like parents to control it for you?
I think so. It should be my own awakening. And in some cases, there should be some specific softwares in which the situation has gone beyond.
The parents don't know some of those sites exist.
Most parents didn't know the blue
internet. What are you saying?
I'm sorry, I have
another question. I want to throw to the people at the back out there. It's another question. Leaving it to the kids is sometimes a dangerous argument because, and I want to come to you. Yeah. A child who's 10, 11, or 12 doesn't necessarily... Sometimes we say we should leave it to the children, educate them, then leave it to the kids, and the kids will be able to figure it out. Somebody who's 10, 11, or 12, or 13 is not necessarily the best judge of whether this is okay or this is not okay. Right. This is appropriate, this is not appropriate.
Absolutely.
This is dangerous, this is not dangerous. They're not the best judges. That's what parents are there for.
Absolutely. And parents rightfully are anxious about it and fearful about all that is available in the net. And there's no question in my mind that a degree of supervision, a degree of censorship out there is essential. But at the same time, informing the child about the what and the why.
Okay. And just to add to that a little bit further, if I want to just now push the debate back in the discussion that you were talking about, the basic thesis that I said that the child is not often the best judge is a general point. Let's now come back to the specifics of Blue Whale and why, it's not even a game, it's the horrible practices or challenges like this are dangerous. Mm-hmm. It's because they are targeting children who are already depressed,
yes,
who are feeling vulnerable,
absolutely,
who can be preyed on. Why has Saraha become a problem? It's not a problem by itself. It's become a problem because it is leading to the systematic bullying of people who could be vulnerable.
Yes.
Now, that particular child, 12, 13, 14, is not a kid who's in the same position as everyone else. That child is already depressed and therefore is far more vulnerable, which is why you've got to make sure that child is protected.
Yes.
Kids who are otherwise feeling happy with life are not going to be going around carving things
absolutely
on their hands.
Absolutely. But, so it's like, you know, I was having this, you know, the blue whale thing again came to me from my kids, like in so many other instances. And what they said was that it's like a lubricant for somebody who's already headed towards that.
Yeah.
It's like showing them a path towards, a way that they were headed already. And indeed, if that is the case, then the bigger question in my mind is that why are there so many kids in our country? And
why?
Why do you think so many children are facing depression?
Wide range of education system of judging people.
We judge them by their marks.
We judge them by their color,
yes,
by their caste.
Vikram,
that's who we really are.
But hang on, isn't that true globally?
This is the most pernicious country
is not judging kids.
Children in.
Hang on. Which country is not judging kids on the basis of their color?
Vikram,
in United
what
States,
the boy
UK,
in the blue T-shirt said.
Which country is not doing it?
One second. I want to go back to what the boy in the blue T-shirt said. He said something very interesting. He said that parents have to talk to their children beyond career orientation. I'm sorry, and I'm not generalizing. I'm sure there are many parents, but largely, what do parents talk about? How was your day at school? How are you doing in studies? Khana khaliya? Health?
you know, you have to somewhere.
Have you studied for your
exam? Have you studied? No, you have to talk to them about everything.
We grew up
you know, the latest music they hear.
About their life.
About
Anuja,
conversation will never happen like that.
We'll come back to general parenting, you know, a little later, and maybe we should do another episode of The Big Fight on that. And I want to just come to a specific subset of what we are talking about. Children facing depression. Children who are vulnerable. Remember, those are the people whom things like Blue Whale are actually targeting. Or for that matter, some serials that have just come out which have become part of popular culture, 13 Reasons Why, which are almost glorifying suicide. These again affect kids who are particularly vulnerable. Anuja, what are the signs that people should be looking for? And at some point, is there a particular... Sohail says that we are, as a society, we are particularly pushing children into depression because of the way, the sort of pressures we are putting on them. Would you agree with that?
As a society, I think we have a tendency to sort of idealize childhood. And we talk to children, we have like different voices when we talk to children. We talk to them in a sweet little Raja Beta voice and we treat them like children. Now, these are kids who are growing up a little. And that's why they're attracted, you know, they have a more adult side, a more serious side, which we refuse to address. And the point is, that is why they're going into things like The Fault in Our Stars, 13 Reasons Why, you know, Hunger Games. These are all young adult novels. And these are things that they are being drawn to because there is a more adult version of them, a grimmer, you know, so they're interested in darker things as well, which we just want shiny, happy little child. Have a birthday party, have a return gift. Our mentality is that. And
Anuja,
we don't talk to them about
Anuja, on pop culture though, is that something which is really so new and so different? I mean, theoretically, let's go back, you know, centuries. Look at nursery rhymes. Look at the sort of nursery rhymes that kids watch. Children have always been drawn to the macabre. Good. They've always been drawn to the negative side of it. I mean, you're having nursery rhymes about cutting off, you know, tails with carving knives and, you know,
children,
all sorts of things.
But that,
that's what children are drawn to.
I don't think children get...
But I think we don't
maybe,
get the symbolism
I think that is,
of that.
You know, those nursery rhymes, I don't really know if children get the dark side of that
depression
stuff.
Depression is not
you know,
a
they
product
really.
Of parenting
I think
or
really,
how you talk to them.
If you look at the serials on Star Plus, have you seen that Data Ratan Singh on that, you know, whatever, that Pehredar Piyaki? It's so treacly sweet and it's like, it's so unreal.
So
children
we are,
parenting.
Not slightly... The basic fundamental things what children feel about how does this depression and feeling of neglect and you know unworthiness start. You know, you the many cases, one student in the class will upload a photo that my parents bought me a this Xbox or a PlayStation. Every child in the class will go home and say, Mama, he got a PlayStation, buy me one. And you don't buy him, you get driven away. In the summers, half of the parents take their children to foreign holidays and all. Those who are not able to go, they'll say, oh, his parents are taking him and you don't like me. That is why you're not taking me.
So there are multiple
and then they try to find other avenues. I think schools can decide.
What are leading to more depression?
Schools can decide a rule of conduct that, you know, all parents, all of you should have a collective responsibility that none of you should buy a Playbox or a video game or Xbox station for your children.
No.
I mean, come on. Now, when you say a parents can come
I
to just, a common
I'm
conclusion.
Seeing, I'm seeing horror on the face of most of the kids out here.
No. If one has to buy, let everybody buy. I mean, you can't have one parent deciding, my children can go to a bar and they can go for all kids.
You know,
let me just return to the depression point.
Yes.
Why is there more depression now?
So,
first of all, is there more depression now than there used to be?
Absolutely. There's an exponential rise in depression. And
exponential rise in depression.
Yes, yes. And just to put it in perspective, by the time a child is 18, there is a 20-25% chance that they will go through clinical depression. One out of four or one out of five kids will actually go through clinical depression. And this is an illness. It's not about a sadness or a bad phase that they're going through, mind you. And there are multiple reasons besides biological, it's parenting.
You've just said something that's really scary. A, you're saying depression in kids in India is growing at an exponential rate.
Absolutely.
And you've said 25% of all kids by the time of
18
could
would have
clinical depression.
Yes, and these are WHO figures, multi-centered research that has gone on in which India has had two or three centers over here. And these are the kind of statistics we have. And we see them, coming out of the woodwork, right?
That's alarming. Yeah. Why is that happening?
So of course, the biological reasons were there and some of the other things like, you know,
that's
growing up, etc.
Adolescence,
what has changed?
You know, boy,
absolutely.
Girl problem has always been there. Hormones,
absolutely.
It's always been there.
But what's new? Today, exactly. What has changed is the rate of change and the way we are struggling to cope with everything from values to morals to family boundaries to career choices to the huge competition that our kids face. I mean, the percentages in DU and other universities go up every time. I mean, you may get a 95 and still don't get, not get
Can
a
Can you imagine 100 on 100 and you don't get admission?
So the pressure on and expectations from kids in academics. Admission. And then, of course, the social space, you know, the shaming and the bullying and the body shaming and all of that, you know, all of that is contributing
to... pressures have gone up so much. That it's an exponential. Can I just ask you, by the way, do you I mean you've been a counselor for such a long time. Are you seeing what he's talking about?
Yeah,
an exponential
right.
rise
and
in depression?
I remember the part of this research is also that if the kids get somebody to support them, to guide them, to mentor them, if they have people, go to people. The people who can sit with them and talk to them, the suicide rates go down. They show depressive symptoms, but it's not necessary that they will shade into depression. So,
how many kids are you noticing in schools increasingly these days who are coming to you with symptoms that you are saying, well, maybe this child is depressed? Is it approaching that 25% mark that he was saying?
Yes, there are kids who will come to you with the statements like that I feel helpless. Means these are the indicators that I feel helpless. I have nobody to go to. I feel at times that maybe I want to hit myself. But when you work with them for some months and years, then you look around what's happening. Then you work on the resilience, the coping mechanisms.
Let me also add here that in the majority of cases, childhood depression is missed completely because the way it presents is not like it presents in adults, right? It presents in mood swings, in behavioral disturbances, impulsivity, risk-taking behaviors. And what do the kids get as a result of that? They get more punishment. They get more boundaries. They're grounded.
I was just
going to
say, Doc,
you know?
In fact,
rather than have, you know, evoke compassion in people who are surrounding them, they get much more spite and much more hatred from people, you know, for them behaving the way they are. But a lot of those behaviors emerge from depression. And those are things that nobody knows about.
I'm really hearing some. Suhail, I mean, are you almost shocked by them? The statistics are quite scary, if you ask me. I'm taken aback a bit.
I said that earlier. We are completely missing the woods for the trees. We are in denial about the kind of pressures we put on our children. We are in denial about the fact that it is a medical issue which needs to be dealt with. We have public hospitals which have zero counselors, and if they do, they're of pathetic quality. You have parents who refuse to take their children for therapy because they believe it has social stigmatization. You are dealing with a severe sociological crippling environment in this country for children.
I just want to say as a parent, that there has also got to be education for parents and awareness for parents.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not just about depression. You know, for a parent, for instance, again, you know, you're raising children, you don't know when it is time to just let them go, you know, as in, for instance, if a child is not studying, not doing whatever, and you're like, you know, let me not pressurize them, let me not. Is it just that I'm just absolbing myself of my parental responsibility and not, I'm not saying the word pushing, but not sort of encouraging the child to study? Or if I'm pressurizing them, is it too much? What are those boundaries?
Plus parental cloning. You want your children to be high achievers, especially in social groups,
you know,
where they are high achievers.
Here's an interesting point. I've seen some statistics. I'm putting up this graphic here in front of you. This has come from the NCRB. Suicides due to examination pressure. You would think in India we've seen that exam pressures were doing it. Actually, it's not the majority. It's a small minority of suicides depression due to examinations.
Right.
Would you agree with that?
So again, I'm not sure where these statistics come from. And I think a lot of this, the research that comes out is perhaps not representative of the whole population, but the way academic pressure affects kids with, especially in senior school years, is appalling. And we see numerous kids slipping into depression and one of the major precipitants is that. Depression, just like suicide, is a multifactorial thing. You can't put your finger on only one thing. I'm sure there are parental issues. Can I just finish? Yeah. I'm sure there are parental issues. They don't understand their kids emotionally. They don't understand the children are different, and you can't compare one with the other. If one is playing good cricket, it doesn't mean the other brother will also do so. They might do something else. And these are kind of things that often get children into difficulties. There are schools who are not emotionally tuned or sensitized. And the majority, unlike the school that Rajni comes from, are schools that are absolutely not equipped to deal with anything beyond beyond academics and good behavior. And so we are missing out on large domains of what is a healthy, nurturing child development, isn't
it? Can I tell you, there's the absence of hobbies in India. School children are no longer involved in plays as much as we were in our times, or elocution, or debating, or the liberal arts, or the writing.
Yeah, I was going to say, depends on the school.
You're not only talking about Delhi, I'm talking about schools by and large. Yeah. Delhi is a blip. I mean, why do you reflect on India from a Delhi perspective?
I think what you're saying is more about free play, apart from hobbies. Because
I don't know the
when
jargon,
we talk about
the
hobbies, it is mandatory for each child either to go for a dance class and perform very well, or Anuja, to go for a sport class and do really, really well.
Okay, I want to come back to the kids. Anuja, are you somewhat alarmed at the statistics we've just heard from Dr. Amit Sen? He says depression in India is growing among children at an exponential rate, and that as many as 25% of kids could be in clinical depression by the time they're 18. Those statistics are scary because it clearly shows that, I mean, blue whale or whatever it is, or 9 or 10 kids committing suicide is therefore or attempting suicide. It's a symptom of the problem. It's not the problem by itself.
Yes.
No, it's deeply frightening. It's very scary. It's very worrying. And I really feel again here that, you know, hearing what everyone is saying, it's so important that parents and children talk to each other. You need to have free-range conversation without any agenda. You need to have the conversation, and you need to share your own flaws with your child and tell him that, when listen, don't watch porn, because when I was 15, I watched it and this is what it did to me. In India, we stick to rigid formal roles. I am the parent and I know best. You're a child, you're my sweet little thing, and you can't have any flaws because otherwise I'll crack up.
And
those
right
conversations
are... Yeah. And I think you summed it up really well. Yeah.
Please, instead of, you know, putting restrictions on your children, please make them responsible. Don't tell them that don't be on Facebook. Allow them to be on Facebook. You know, they are responsible enough. If you talk to them...
Should you have their Facebook password?
No, definitely not. But you must tell them that, you know, once in a while, I might end up checking your Facebook.
No,
how many of you think that you will give your password to your parents?
Stop it. Even as a friend, there's a privacy setting.
How many of you? Anyone? No one. That's what I'm saying. Only one out of all this audience said that they want to give their password to their parents. I mean, don't ask for your children's
password. How many of you would make your parents your friend on Facebook? Lots of them.
In the restricted.
Okay, chalo, that's
in the restricted.
Okay,
in the
let me get some more restricted mode. What's your view?
Like our panel said, that Saraha and Blue Whale there. My parents came to me first to tell me what it is, and they explained it to me. And for the Facebook password, like, my parents are my friends on Facebook, and like, they know everything what's going on in my life. So
he's
that's
had
not
a conversation. You know, he's just had the conversation in the middle.
I'm out of time on this show.
Schools in India have workshops for their children. I mean, I think it's very important for schools, especially all the teachers, to organize cyber workshops for the children. Tell them what are the consequences of cyberbullying, why you should not do sexting, why you should not share selfies, why you should not send compromising photographs, what can be the consequences. You have to tell them that, you know, your digital footprints can never be removed, and this will stay with you for your life forever, and make your children responsible users of internet and social media. That's the only way out. Censorship, blocking URLs, monitoring, I think there is very little they'll take you far. Nice. They'll very, you know.
So, okay. My point is that,
final thoughts.
Yeah. So, I don't think large-scale changes can happen through policing or laws. It comes through awareness. It comes through working at the grassroots with the whole community. And we have to make that community happen with parents, with schools, with other people who are stakeholders. Schools can most definitely get life skills education and education about emotional health, etc., as a core part of their education, just as important as maths.
Yeah.
And till the time we do
when I hear so many parents not having time, I can keep on blaming them, but I also have to empathize at one point of time that they are busy, and can we keep on blaming, or we work as a community with the children, for the children. Parents don't have that much know-how, as the boy said, that they may not know so many details, but the counselor is doing all that research about the thing and can tell what is right, what is wrong, what to approach, what not to approach. So definitely schools and parents together, nothing like that.
Because one sentence, from parents, please become the friends of your children. That's the only way out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anandita, final thoughts from you.
Playing a game like Blue Whale is not just a matter of being depressed. It is also a matter of being a person with low self-confidence, a person who's trying to prove himself in this competitive world. And in such a case, it is the lack of support, family support, that makes the problem more complex.
Manika, final quick thoughts from you.
My thoughts as a parent, and I just want to say this, yes, of course, talk, have free-ranging conversations from sex to music to life to everything. But it's okay for parents to say no sometimes. You know, you are friends, but you're also a parent. It's okay to say no. And it's okay for you
he
to
said,
not
he said,
feel...
go from being parents to being friends.
No, no, it's okay to say...
don't forget that you are parents.
No, no, the, yeah,
you can,
don't forget.
You should say no.
You should say no. It's okay to say no. It's okay to...
I agree
and
with
also,
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Completely.
By the way, boundaries. No. Yes. Having boundaries yes. has
Vikram,
been psychologically shown to be good for
oh,
kids.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You just say do what you want when you want to get depressed.
And Vikram, one last thing to all parents. One last thing to all parents. Anuja started. And she said, you know, how as parents we feel so shamed and so guilty, this one's parent. It's not just about what other parents are doing. It's also when a lot of other parents come up to you and said, you know, my kid got 96. How much did your child get? It's okay. It doesn't yeah, matter.
It's okay. It's okay. Fine.
It's
Anuja,
right.
Final words from you. We are flat out of time on this show.
I'm not my child's friend. I'm my child's mother. That must be very important. I'm your mother. I'm an accessible mother. I'm a non-judgmental
exactly.
mother, and I love you very much. But I am your parent, and I will put some rules down, and you bloody well listen to me.
Anuja, Ari, that's a great way to sum up, because at the end of the day, yeah, you know, we've heard a lot about parenting. At the end of the day, I think it's a startling, startling findings that we're hearing out here. A large number of kids are getting depressed. The answer is not necessarily to say, well, you can do whatever you want, because children do need boundaries. Yes, parents need to be friends to their children. They need to also remember that at the end of the day, they are parents. That's why parents, that's what parents are there for.
You have hundreds of friends, only one set of parents.
Yeah, hundreds of friends, but only one set of parents, which you have to keep in mind. And insofar as these new threats that come, whether it is blue whale or something else, at the end of the day, we're going to have to find answers to that. If it's come from technology, technology will give some of the answers, but not all of them. Best way is to talk to the kids about all of this. You're watching The Big Fight. We'll be back next week. Bye for now.